We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. Stay tuned to the end of the interview. We'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes, and all of the show notes are over at TheEntrepreneurEthos.com. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the ratings and reviews. Thanks for the emails. Thanks for all the shares. Well, thanks for everything. Now, on to my guest for today, Alan Silvestri, founder and CEO of Growth Gorilla, a content promotion and distribution agency for the SaaS space. Alan put in 9 years as an electrical engineer in Italy before making the jump to entrepreneurship. He quickly learned that he didn't like working at an office. He also wanted to be able to take time off to tour with his band. He turned to the internet and started learning skills in SEO and website building. One of his course teachers took him on as an apprentice, enabling him to further develop his expertise, particularly in link building. He created efficient processes and eventually started his own agency so he could finally quit his day job. Alan credits his interest in American pop culture with helping him push him over the edge into entrepreneurship. He also believes that for an entrepreneur, the stress of staying the same is more than the stress of change. Growth Gorilla has a very specific mission to promote content and distribution through SEO and backlinking for SaaS companies. Alan believes that having a specialization is key. He also encourages companies to keep their language simple if they want to engage new clients. Now, let's get better together. Alan Silvestri, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jari, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you are quite welcome. We got introduced through another person named Georgios, who I also interviewed. And I actually got to meet Georgios through Farzad, who I also interviewed. So when everyone's saying, well, this whole networking thing and da-da-da-da-da, Jari, I don't like it. Well, you get to meet cool people because people introduce you to cool people. So
yeah, exactly. We're just talking about how this is a good excuse to meet new and cool people. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah. I always say that I use this to network because I'm a highly functional introvert and it's really hard for me to do that.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Same.
So, host a podcast. Everyone will talk to you.
For now, I'm just like doing mainly client calls, which is not the best because it's kind of unnerving as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I might consider doing a podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's just super interesting. I've done 140 episodes over the last year and a half, almost 2 years. And it's like one of those things where I was sick of blogging and I'm like, well, what's the next thing? Well, this podcast thing sounds cool. I go, this seems so easy. Just record yourself on the thing. And it's like 4 to 5 times harder than writing a blog post.
I'm sure there's a lot of moving parts and stuff that you have to do.
Yeah. But it's extremely satisfying because conversation the more you practice it as a highly functional introvert, especially on like client calls or like, I'm really bad at sales. Like sales is something that's just this, my kryptonite nemesis.
Oh yes.
You know,
I know, like, what you're talking about.
Yeah. Cause it's just feels weird, you know? And I found as the more I practice talking.
Yeah. I've actually just started like working with like an agency coach as well. His name is Dev Basu and he's from Canada. He is working at Powered by Search, which is a content marketing / marketing agency for SaaS companies. Mm-hmm. And he's teaching me all of the ins and outs of sales and how to be better at that, because it's something I was really terrible at. But yeah, unfortunately, you kind of need that to run a business.
Right. Every entrepreneur is their first salesperson.
Yeah.
And if once you build the product or the service, half the battle's done. The other half is trying to sell and market the silly thing, because no one gives a shit. Full stop. No one cares as much as you do, right? But we're getting ahead of ourselves because we were like just chatting around about stuff. I want to get through all of that, talk about all what you're doing over at Growth Gorilla. But before we do that, as I always like to say, tell us all how you got to do what you're doing today.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I started my work career doing something that was totally different from what I do now. I worked for 9 years. Like basically out of school. I worked for 9 years in an office job. I was essentially an electric engineer doing electric diagrams. And we were basically building machines, like robotic machines for the medical sector, stuff like that.
Cool.
And so that was essentially the job that I got out of school, because it was the same stuff that I studied and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, to be honest, it wasn't the job that I liked. I actually kind of hated like basically the office life. Yeah. And so in the meantime, since I was 12, I was playing guitar and singing with my band. I had a punk rock band with my brother and a few friends. And so we were like trying to do something like go out and tour, play shows and stuff. But every time we had like a 1 or 2 weeks tour, I had to ask for the days off work, like 3 months in advance. And so it was like basically a pain in the ass. And So, like at that point, I started looking like with the classic how to make money online search, because I wanted to have a job that would allow me to essentially kind of, like either have some free time or be in control of my own time, right?
Right.
So I stumbled upon a few training courses. I bought some that were like total garbage. And then I finally found one that was kind of good. And that was about on how to run affiliate websites, basically. So that's the first place where I stumbled upon SEO, search engine optimization. And I started learning it. I built my own site. I was able to bring that site to make some money, you know, like $500 a month. So nothing special, but like the most important thing in there was that it essentially taught me a new skill that I didn't have before. And so I, basically dove like very deep into SEO. I started learning about technical SEO and link building as well. So at that point, the same guy that was running this training course saw me, because they had a Facebook group and stuff, and I was very active in there. So he saw me like posting stuff, and he saw the website that I created using the training course. So he thought like that I was kind of good somehow. And so he sent me
kind of good somehow. I love that.
So he sent me like an email, and it was like, hey, I'm about to start a new website. This is going to be a very kind of big, like authority site in the health space, like a blog. Would you like to work with me on that site as like an apprentice or something like that? And so, I said yes. And that was basically my side project, basically after work. Kind of every day, like from 6 p.m. till 8 or 9 for 3 years, I worked with him on this side project, and I specialized even more in SEO. And he put me in charge of link building, which is basically trying to build backlinks from other websites to the client website to increase the search engine rankings, essentially. So what I've done is I was able to sort of come up with my own systems and processes that I was. So in the beginning, I was basically doing everything by myself, and then I was able to systematize that. And in the end, I was like, so if I'm doing this thing for one person, why can't I do the same thing for multiple clients and get more money, right? Essentially.
Yeah.
So that's when I started hiring the first few people to help me out with some of the process. And then I started looking for clients, and that's how I came with the agency that I have now.
Wow. A little bit circuitous. I mean, I have a degree in electrical engineering too. I actually spent like 20 years doing that.
Wow.
mostly on the IC, integrated circuit design, chip design. I sometimes talk about the semiconductor business that is all the magic behind the, you know, what's inside your phone, stuff like that. Yeah. No, I used to design like radios and manufacture them and DNA sequencing, all these, it's crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Then I fell into this whole PR and marketing comms thing through, you know, as I talk about Jane, my late wife, she did this job. And so I continued on after she died, but I always, unlike you, I miss it sometimes.
Yeah, I guess because maybe you work in that because you liked it. I mean, for me, it was mainly the first thing that I got out of school.
Yeah.
Because it was similar to what I studied, and people were like, yeah, go work like for this company and blah, blah, blah. So I essentially learned like the stuff that I was doing then. Yeah, basically learned it like while working there.
Yeah. So I don't, on the job training.
So I don't think that school like really prepared me for that.
Yeah.
So it was good to learn a new skill there as well. I guess I'm kind of like learning new stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up in Silicon Valley, so it was pretty natural back in the 90s to be like, oh, so what are you going to do after you get out of college? I'm going to go to a startup. Well, what's the most startups in Silicon Valley right now? Because this was before the internet, like the internet didn't exist. Semiconductor companies.
Yeah.
I guess I'll be a semiconductor company guy. And I did. I worked at it for a long time. But it was funny because it's opportunity, right? Like the whole reason why I went to school for electrical engineering, because my dad was an electrical engineer. My dad worked at United Airlines, right? And he like did, you know, all the electronics for like autopilot, wind shear, collision avoidance, this like crazy stuff, right? He wanted me to work at United. And so he's like, Jari, you got to get a good, stable job, a good company like United Airlines. And, you know, it's a great job. You could travel the world. And I, you know, as kids, we would travel the world, but we would always do it on standby. So anyone that's in the airline business knows that you can basically fly for free, but you're on standby. I hate standby. Absolutely despise it. As a kid, it was the most anxiety I've ever had in my life. Even to this day, I still get to the airport like super early. If someone says, oh, give up your ticket for $5,000. I'm like, nope, this is my ticket, my plane. I'm getting on this damn plane. You know, I hate it, right? But, you know, what was good about, you know, getting kind of like nudged into that was that, Silicon Valley, like it was so many companies doing semiconductors and, you know, San Jose State where I went was at the center of it. So it was natural. Yeah, wow. It's natural. Yeah. So, but yeah, like school only prepares you to think about how to do a job. It's not like they had to train me how to do, they didn't teach you this in school, right?
To be honest, I mean, I would like, I think that like school should improve in a way that teaches you how to learn so that you are better prepared on learning new skill, because in the end, like, it's kind of impossible to know what you want to do when you're like 15 or 17.
Totally.
So they should like teach you how to learn so that then when you're older and you start working in other places, you know how to learn new stuff that can be useful for you.
Yeah. I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the education space. I mean, look at all the great online, degrees, like the world of education and information is just so democratized. Pretty much learn anything. I mean, like there was, you know, there's Lambda School for Coding is an example. I know about them. There's this one called, escapes me. You can get like a degree online for $5,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, just this crazy stuff, because you're right. It's like, teach me how to learn and I can learn anything.
With COVID. With COVID. I mean, it's crazy now. So I've also had a client, which is Podia, which is like a course creation platform. Mm. And they were doing like an amazing job Yeah. Right. So it's becoming like more common as well. There's a lot of tools and stuff that allow you to even create your own training courses.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy now to like to put content out there for people.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's learning how to learn. I think that's the one thing that most entrepreneurs that I know of, you know, they get into the gig and it's like, no one teaches you this job, quote unquote.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. Throw you in the deep end. You'll figure it out. Ain't that hard. And you're like, what do I do? There's actually, I found this one place called New Founder School. I actually talked to one of their founders the other day and it was a really neat idea where they have a curriculum for how to be an entrepreneur because they don't teach you that in school. I mean, I have an MBA. They didn't teach us entrepreneurship in school. In fact, I mean, the only real benefit of getting an MBA for me was I learned how to pitch. Like all we did was PowerPoint. It was like every single class was like, your project's to do a PowerPoint presentation on blog. And you're like,
God.
Yet another PowerPoint presentation, right? But I think the challenge, you know, with all of this, especially for younger folk, like there is so much out there to do and so much to kind of like do. It can be overwhelming. And it sounds like for you, you know, okay, went to school, electrical engineering, got a job, wasn't for me, wanted to be in a band, figured out I needed more autonomy and freedom.
Yeah.
And then boom, I'm now doing websites and SEO. So that's a common, do you think that's common for people to like your so your peers, like your buddies? Like,
yeah,
what are
yeah,
they I doing? Mean,
no, to be honest, I don't think it's common, especially in Italy. Like we're like 20 years behind. So yeah, I mean, like the other two guys that were in the band with me. So yeah, they're still doing the same job as like 7 years ago now. So the only two that basically follow this path is me and my brother. So that's kind of different because we're brothers, so we share stuff with each other, right?
Yeah.
So this is why we followed like a similar path. But all the others, my bandmates and all my other friends, I would say there are just a few of them kind of realized that they didn't want to be in a 9-to-5 job every day. So some of them like quit the job, but still none of them are at that level where they essentially have a business and they are running the business. Like everybody is still kind of working in a job. So one of my friends, he quit like a job in a department store and now is working as like a photographer, which is kind of like what he likes to do, but he's still doing like photography for an agency or like for basically for other businesses. So right. It's not like he has built his own thing that he's in control of.
Right.
So I guess it's kind of difficult as well. And sometimes I kind of take it for granted, like the fact that I decided to take the plunge and do this thing on my own. So it's good. Yeah, it's a good reminder to know that I'm doing something that is difficult. And so if I'm stressed or anxious or nervous, it's totally normal, basically.
Yeah, that's part of the gig. Right. Stress, anxiety, fear of uncertainty and doubt. I can't even count on fingers and toes how many times that's been the case. I mean, it is interesting because, you know, different countries have different kind of mentalities on this. Like you said, you're from Italy. Now I think you're living in the UK.
Yeah.
Very different entrepreneurial environment. What do you think it was that sort of tilted you over to that? I mean, you know, some people in your position would be like, okay, I want the freedom. Okay. I want to do my band thing. Okay. I'll have this job and I'll just deal with it. Whereas you're like, this isn't working for me. Is there something in your past that sort of, do you have entrepreneurs in your family or is it, what's the.
No, to be honest, no, there's nothing in my family, but yeah, fundamentally it took me a while first. So, I mean, I was like doing this thing like part-time for 3 years before I decided to quit
the
office job. So it did take me some time. But then I guess the fact that I was, I've always been more into the stuff coming from the US or basically other countries like that. So stuff where, like everything and this kind of business is is kind of ahead compared to Italy. So I've always looked at the US basically for music, specifically with my band, like for movies, like you can see in the back.
Yeah, you know, you're a big 80s movies. I mean, we got to talk about 80s movies. So that's pretty cool.
And so, yeah, I guess like looking outside of Italy for like inspiration and this kind of thing is kind of like what pushed me over the edge, like to know that, yeah, as long as I know some English, some good English, I can kind of do it. But yeah, also then I saw that some other people were doing the same thing, some other people coming from Italy, some other people coming from Europe. And so, yeah, I decided to give it a try because I couldn't stand the office job anymore, to be honest. So it's that situation where the stress of staying the same basically needs to be like more than the stress of changing, right? So yeah, I got to that like point and I couldn't stand it anymore.
That's a good point. It's a good point. And I also think it's also a good point to have your side hustle, right? Figure out if this is what you want to do. I mean, you know, there's some people just quit, they're on a whim or whatever, but I think even though you may hate what you're doing, you need to eat, you need to pay the rent. there's obligations, and a lot of people that have kids or a family, you know, that's their biggest barrier to entry is the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, like, I've always been very rational in everything that I do. I like to plan stuff. I'm a note-taking nerd. I have all my software. I do my weekly reviews and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, first off, I wanted to have like 6-7 months of expenses covered. And then I waited until basically the side hustle was kind of like the same level of the office job in terms of revenue. So that's when I could say, even if this goes badly, I have a few months covered and I still have some revenue coming in. And so I can still like go into a similar company, similar to the one that I was working on before, and ask for a similar job in the worst case scenario, basically.
Interesting. Yeah. That is a very rational way to address it. It is interesting how people think it's like an all or nothing thing. They see all these, you know, survivor bias billionaire, you know, oh, I just quit everything, burned all the boats, I am never going back. Like Elizabeth Holmes said that as part of her, you know, Theranos, right? They're doing actually the Theranos trial right now. And her advice was just so bad. It was just abysmally bad. But she raised $700 million, some crazy amount of money, because she literally lied about the technology, right? So then you've got, you know, the Zuckerbergs and the Theranos and the, you know, Holmes or whatever. All they're like, oh no, it's just all or nothing. Like, go all in. What are you waiting for? You know?
Yeah, I mean, for some people, maybe it's in the way that they're wired, and maybe they need that extra pressure of like the fact that they need to make it, because otherwise they don't have nothing. Like they don't. Yeah. So I guess it's just a way of how somebody is. The brain, maybe.
Wired in the brain. Yeah. I think it's probably true. I mean, maybe that's just the motivation. Like if they're halfway in, halfway out, they just can't commit. They just got to go all in. But
yeah. For some people, it's very difficult. For example, I have one guy that was working in the office job with me is like 50 something. And so I always, like, he has great experience. He's great at what he does. And the company still pay him the same salary that they've been paying him for the last 20 years. So I was like, what do you have to lose? I mean, can't you go looking for another job that can pay you more with the experience that you have, instead of just staying here, same salary after 20 years? I mean, there's not like really much to lose there. So just give it a try. And if it goes badly, then you can still keep working at the same place.
Yeah, it's the fear. Like my dad had that same thing. So my dad worked at United Airlines for like 35 years, right? Or 33, some crazy number. He wanted to go longer, but then September 11th happened.
Oh.
And they retired him early. Mm-hmm. And my brother worked there too. My brother was a mechanic there, and they laid him off too. And I'm just like, good luck on the safe haven. Like,
yeah.
They don't give a shit about you. There's no safe job. Yeah. I mean, actually, I think being an entrepreneur is a safer job because we have to hustle every day. It's like in our DNA, maybe not in our DNA, but our practice of, oh, got to go get more business, got to do this. Yeah. It's all on me. So you just like literally focus, okay, I'm going to build this and do this or whatever. And I think that's one thing that scares people, you know, like just showing up to the job and getting the pay packet and cool. You know, 2 weeks.
I guess the fact that like being in control is both a positive and a negative as well, depends on how you look at it and how you are as a person as well. So yeah, this guy, like my friend, I guess that he has like both fear, but on the other hand, it might also be that this thing has become like a habit. Mm. So it just stays there as a habit and
good point.
Doesn't need to change.
The bad corporate coffee is just bad corporate coffee. Well, is there even bad coffee in Italy? Because I mean,
trust me.
Because I'm a big espresso fan. I have a shirt that says coffee or die, but I'm a big espresso fan, right?
Coffee machines in the office is not great.
Yeah.
Even in Italy.
I mean, that's like the standard, right? Like bad corporate coffee in Italy, then time to leave. But I love coffee and love the whole espresso.
See, that's one of the like the moments that I really don't miss about the office job, like the coffee break where everybody just complains about their work and basically nobody does like anything to change it. So they're like, so it's part of their day, just like complain together and then go back to the desks and just keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I mean, corporate for me was a great education. There were some things that I had to learn and mature a little bit. But I'm just unemployable and almost unmanageable when it comes to that. Because I would be like, what's the right thing to do for the company? And this doesn't make sense. And apparently you have to play politics, which I'm not good at.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, I speak my mind. And that was never a good thing to do. The complaining.
Yeah. And the other thing is like meritocracy doesn't really exist, especially in Italy. I don't know how it is in the States, but in Italy, it's
an illusion. It's a real illusion. Yeah. There are companies that say, oh, we're a meritocracy. Like, you know, Google touts that there's all these big tech companies and it's all BS, BS. Because if you get more than two or three people together, politics takes over and leadership is all about politics. It's not about competency. Because as a leader or a manager, you don't need to do the job. You need to manage the people that do the job. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are good at it, like, and again, you know, spectrum of folks in the world, there's the narcissistic egomaniac a-hole that knows how to play the game and they go up. And then there's the people that are like trying to do the right thing, like your coworkers that just bitch and moan about management. Yeah. I mean, it's like a sport, right?
Whoever had the worst day is going to win.
Oh yeah. It's like, there's another, what's the other country that's just so prevalent? Oh, I can't remember the name. Anyway, I'll find it out, but it's like, who can be more miserable?
Yeah, exactly.
And like, as an entrepreneur, I mean, there's miserable days, but the buck stops with you, right? Like it's I'm talking about the boss as an a-hole. Oh, I'm the boss.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like even if I had a bad day, the fact is that I choose to have that bad day, you know, so next time at least I will try to do something different, not to have the bad day.
It's a very good point. I mean, I think that's the thing that some people can't handle. It's actually the responsibility for yourself to create your own destiny, build this independent life that completes you. Some people are not cut out for that because it's a little scary to be like, you mean it's up to me? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Like, no one's telling me what to do? Huh? What? I mean, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do know like some people that like, they really want to be told what to do. And that's like totally fine. We all need like those people to run our businesses as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like for me, I really wanted to have the freedom and it's not the control, it's more the freedom to do what I want when I want with the people that I want to do it with. So
yeah,
that's... yeah, just like basically choice, having choice essentially.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always say that like I do this gig because of the freedom. I don't do it for the money, because the money never comes. I mean, you can make a living, right? But you're not going to be rich. Yeah. I mean, the ones that are like billionaires are like, I can count on what? Like two hands? Like how many of the, you know? So probability is super low. So if you get into this gig to be rich, you're fooling yourself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting into it to build an independent life that completes you, or you want the freedom and autonomy to do what you want to do, work with who you want to work with, this is a great gig. But along with freedom comes great responsibility.
Like your powers.
Exactly. Oh, it's a superpower, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because like you could just tell someone to F off and like, yeah, well, that's what it is, right? I mean, it's a double.
Yeah, I don't like a client. The client can go. It's fine. I'll find another one. And yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. And there's some stress in that, of course.
Of course.
But, you know, but the control of your time and the freedom to do what you want to do is worth more money than anyone can ever pay me per hour.
Oh yeah.
I can't think of a number where I would be like indentured, beholden, servant. I mean, I can't think of a number. That's how.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah. Sometimes in like my worst days when I'm really stressed and I hate like all the clients and all that, like it kind of goes through my mind. And basically, I'm like, like I could maybe like go to work at like any other kind of agency similar to this and just be like an employee and not have to deal with this stuff. But then, yeah, then I think, so I would have to work from this time to this time. And during this time, I can't do this other thing that now I'm doing and all that. And then it completely like goes back to, yeah, bad idea. Like, keep doing what you're doing, just stick with it. And, how do they say, like embrace the pain or embrace
the suck.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a very common one here in the States. I mean, it's a very good point. It's a very good point. There are times when I'm like, especially when I'm grousing or complaining to my fiance and she just looks at me and she's just like, well, you know, you choose this. I'm like, I know I choose this. Cause she works at a big company. She's been working this big company for a long time. She really loves it. She's really good at it. She does a great job. She loves what she does. Mm-hmm. And we're like these two totally different people. I'm like, you know, cause she's always like, you know, well, how many people have you met today or this week? Cause I'm always meeting people like constantly, mm-hmm. like I've got a show. I meet people, I talk with people, I give lectures, like I try like to be out there. Right? Cause again, I'm mm-hmm. working on the muscle of how do I, you know, use like as an entrepreneur, you have to put yourself out there. You have to make your own opportunity. No one's going to just, I sit there, twiddle my thumbs and they knock on the door. Hey, Jari, come help us out. I'd love that, but that never happens, right? That's rare, right? I have to go out and
put
myself out there and people need to know who I am and what I do, just like you, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's interesting because this agency model, which is the same one I have, which I'm trying to build more products and basically products and programs that are more like, this is what you get as opposed to, you know, you know, I'm sure you have the same kind of challenges with this. Yeah. I know Georgios had the same thing too. He's like, yeah, this client works great, but we need to really, you know, kind of escalate mm-hmm. to a point where there's, because I think the agency world's changing a bit. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I think
too?
So. Yeah, I think so. I mean, like from the way I see it, I really think that like specialization is becoming more common. There's almost an agency for like maybe every kind of niche or industry now. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, we work with software companies. And I really think that this is a good like advantage point that people can use to differentiate from everything that's out there. Because otherwise, yeah, if you remain like a generalist, you basically have the risk of becoming like a vendor. And so clients don't see you as a trusted advisor. They see you just as like an order taking kind of machine that does the work. And so I think, yeah, at least for us, this is kind of like the direction where we want to go. And I see a lot of friends like Georgios as well mm-hmm. that are trying to do a similar thing.
Yeah. It's interesting because same with entrepreneur for a product or service company or a SaaS company, right? the specific equals the universal. Like this is a very common story thing. The more specific you can get and like auger in on that, the more universal the message and the more universal the potential application. And for stories, this is very true, because as you explain your particular like circumstance, the people that hear your story, they make it their own. It's not making it so general never works, because people can't connect to it. People have to find their thing in your story, their thing in your company. Like, yeah, hey, we only do software, you know, we do SaaS companies. We don't do hardware companies, as an example. That specificity, right? There may be lots of things that translate over. And usually there is, right? Like if you are really good at one thing, there's always an adjacent market or adjacent thing that you can be good at too.
Oh yeah.
But to your point, like I see your point, and I actually see this as well. There's a lot, all these niche things where you can like go, okay, I need to be this, and this. And people run in, I think entrepreneurs run into a problem when they try to go too wide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really becoming more fragmented as well.
Yeah.
So like I don't think that 7 years ago you could have like many link building agencies, maybe, that just do link building. Like it was more, like an SEO agency that does link building, content, and a bunch of different things. And now you have the different departments, basically. So that's our philosophy as well. Like basically, we try to come in for the clients, kind of like as their outsourced content promotion team. So like typically, software companies have a content production team that publishes the articles, but they lack the other part that basically comes after the content is on the blog. And essentially, that's what we do. Because I think at the end of the day, most companies are looking for a trusted advisor, yes, but also for something that looks like a turnkey solution where they can basically pay a monthly retainer. They get a strategy, so they see that everything is good and these people know what they're doing. But on the other hand, they also don't want to be involved more than enough, right? So this is kind of like what we try to do and what other people I've seen doing as well.
Yeah, no, I see that same thing, especially on the strategy and grand strategy side of content and storytelling. So my expertise is in storytelling for tech startups. And I find that a lot of them have got like really good ideas, really good tech. They tend to get like product market fit or loose product market fit. And then as they start to scale, they don't know what story to tell the marketplace. And it's usually some combination of look at how cool our tech is, as opposed to what does our tech solve for you? Like what's the hook for me to even care? Right. I mean, exactly. You know, like no one cares. Right? No one cares.
Oh my God.
Doing.
Yeah.
But no one cares. Right.
Yeah. Working with software companies, we see like so many like landing pages full of those like general words, like
buzzword
we
bingo.
Do infrastructure software for something that I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I call that buzzword bingo. Or we coalesce the vapors of human existence into a tangible form on our blockchain crypto platform universally. And you're like, huh? What?
Yeah, see that more and more with crypto as well. So I'm into crypto as well.
Yeah.
And I do realize that like for somebody that's totally new in the space, it was basically, like most crypto companies, they have these kind of buzzwords in the title. And like, it's very difficult for somebody that's new in the space to just come in and understand what they're saying or what they're talking about. So I'm like, if your main goal is to involve more people in the space, because I personally think that it's a very good space and it's the future. So why don't you just use some more simple words? So it's like virtual money that you can use to also earn interest and stuff like that, right? So the stuff that you were saying before
it's really
impossible to understand.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the thing I found when it comes to tech companies is they think that if they dumb it down, quote unquote, or make it simple, that for some reason they lack credibility or like people aren't going to think that they know what they're doing. And I always say, if you can't explain it to your grandmother, you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, you just don't.
True.
Because
that's
like,
very true. Yeah.
Come on. Like, in order to really truly understand something, you have to learn it, you do it, and then you have to teach it. That's sort of the triplet of that. That's really important, because the more you can teach someone that it can actually learn about it, then the more you understand it, then the more ability you have to explain it. And the simpler you can explain it, the wider your story, the wider your message will go. It's like a meme, right? Memes yeah. reproduce because they're simple. They're clear, concise, and compelling. And they just suck into your brain, right? If yeah, you don't exactly. do that, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, there's this great, you know, like ClickUp. Have you heard of ClickUp? I'm sure you've heard of ClickUp, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm using it. Yeah, we're using ClickUp in the agency. So.
Yeah. So what's their tagline? Do you know
I don't remember right now.
I drive up and down the 101 and the 28, like on the 101 down here in Silicon Valley. They have a billboard, right? Billboard. Like, who does billboards anymore? Apparently, billboards are effective.
Yeah.
On their, I mean, what ClickUp does is super complicated, right? I have no idea. I have no idea, right? But on the billboard, it says, save a day a week, guaranteed.
Boom.
I'm on.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you do, but I want to save a day, right? Because that's an emotional thing. And then I find out from a friend of mine, it's like, oh yeah, they do every online tool you can think of, super poor, but it's all integrated.
And they exactly. It's like an all-in-one project management tool, but yeah, it sounds better if you say save a day. Yeah.
And so they just grind on these features and keep on adding. They just like can't stop, won't stop. Just keep going, keep going. Yeah. It's not as good as say Google Doc or whatever, but they're just like, we're going to grind on this because we're going to save you a day a week. And you're like, I want to save a day a week. I mean, same with Superhuman, the email tool.
Yeah. Superhuman. I do have that as well.
Yeah. Right. Superhuman, right. Save, what is it? An hour a day or two, what some couple hours a day. You're like, what is Superhuman? It's not even like, it's an email tool, but it's called Superhuman.
Yeah, exactly. Even the name is cool.
Even the name is cool.
Makes you want to get it.
Yeah. I mean, their CEO, Raul, who's really cool guy, he wrote a great article about product market fit he had a product market fit survey. He called it a product market fit engine. And I'm like, love what he did. I've done so many of these product market fit surveys based on his stuff for clients and other folk. And I'm just like, I love this idea. In fact, I'm building tools around telling better stories and doing all these processes. Like you mentioned, you know, you have all these processes. I'm trying to build products to make PR, marketing, strategic communications a little bit more manageable, a little bit more understandable. Because a lot of people, when they say PR, what's the ROI? And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Right? And they're like, well, we need ROI because this is the way we're a data-driven company. And I'm like, you're full of it. You're not data-driven. You don't even look at data. You collect so much data you don't even look at. You're full of it. No idea what you're doing, right?
Everybody's obsessed with data, but they don't even know what they're doing.
Or the reports, right? The one I love is the most. Yeah. Well, we need a weekly report. We need a monthly report. I'm like, okay, all right. Never look at it. Never look at it because they don't know what they're looking at. The thing about management as a manager and as a leader, right? The thing your job is to communicate like the vision and put the metrics and measures in place to sort of make sure the guardrails are there. Mm-hmm. But your day is so inundated that you need simple metrics to be like, are we going like generally the right way? And this is why everyone loves digital ads, right? Digital ads are like, oh, well, we'll just growth hack our way to success because we can just turn the cranks and we know the ROI, we know the ROAS, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Well, what do you put into the ad engine?
Yeah.
What do you scale? Because you're just going to waste money. I mean, I've seen this so many times where people just like waste hundreds of thousands of dollars on trying to figure out the message based on digital ads.
Exactly. I got some people trying to convince me to do to start doing ads, but I'm not very convinced.
Well, it's a waste of money. I think it's the ads are a very specific thing that you need scale in order to do. But more importantly, you need to know what to scale. Mm-hmm. So that is where ads play is a little bit of an experiment. But like most people spend, let's say you have your marketing budget and outreach budget.
Yeah.
Most people spend 80% of their money on ads. they spend 20% on content and link building. So like what you do and what content might do.
Yes. Right?
That should be switched. Because you cannot control, the ad thing is going to arbitrage out. And in order for ads to be super effective, you have to have scale of ads, which means you got to compete against everyone else that's paying way more money than your little startup ads.
Yeah.
What can you control?
Yeah. I mean, on some level, that's kind of true for content and links as well. Like sooner or later, you're going to have to compete with the people that are ranking on number one and that have thousands of backlinks. But yeah, like, yeah, at least you also have the long tail. So maybe you rank for keywords that nobody's ranking for and you can still get some traffic there. And it's something that once you invested in that for maybe a year, 2 years, then you can kind of live like that and maybe scale down a little bit. It depends on what your goals are. Yeah. But yeah, with ads, you always need to constantly be pumping there.
Yeah, you need to be doubling up. You always got to double down on ads. But it was funny because, that's a long-term strategy that not a lot of folks. They're like, well, we're just going to pour money into ads and then we're going to grow and go viral. And you're like, okay.
Go viral.
Until you run out of money.
Yeah.
I'm very negative on this just because I've seen it so many times where people waste so much money not scaling the right thing because they don't have their story straight. They're not thought about the whole process. They don't have like, this is what it has to be. Because it works, like ads work. Don't get me wrong. Like I've seen it and I'm a curmudgeon about it, but they clearly work, but they work when the inputs are properly input. So if you got garbage crap in, you're going to get garbage crap out. You need to know that.
Yeah, strategy. Exactly. I mean, like even if you know what you're doing, like you're going to have to test it for a while before you figure it out.
Yeah.
And so like testing costs money, obviously with ads. So,
So, for this next generation of entrepreneur that's kind of coming up, what sort of questions do you think they should ask themselves about being an entrepreneur?
There's something really like really interesting that I learned from Alex McLafferty. He was the founder of WP Curve. And I did like a training course with him. And I remember he had this question that was like picture yourself in a few years and you already have a successful business. And essentially the successful business is the thing that you're dreaming of now, right? So picture yourself already being successful and ask yourself, why do you want this, right? So you need to picture yourself having like basically exactly the thing that you're dreaming of now and ask yourself, why do you want like that specific thing? So that's gonna like make you reflect on all the different moving parts of the business and think about exactly why do I want like maybe the freedom? Why do I want the money? Or how much money do I want, right? So kind of backtrack from that question. That is a very good question that I like to ask myself quite often. And then the other thing is what am I good at? So pay attention to maybe your strength or your weaknesses and see if there's something that you can use. But the thing there is also that the strengths that you have can also work against you, right?
So,
also think about the downsides of the thing that you're good at, because maybe I'm good at design, but the fact that I'm a design nerd, like maybe means that I'm not good at sales. So I need somebody to help me with that and all that stuff. And then lastly, the main thing that I like to kind of ask myself as well is what are my values? And so... So this is something that I like to do every 6 months or so. And it's like an exercise that I use to determine if a project that I'm working on is still viable or not. So compare two projects and you have like a table with the different values that are like your personal values. So like it can be money, it can be purpose, it can be family, love or something like that. And then, so you basically compare the two projects that you're working on and give scores based on the values to each of them. And that kind of tells you which of the two projects is the best one to pursue. So you can maybe leave the other one and focus on the best one of these. So it's important to ask it, like quite frequently, like I would say every 6 months is good. And that's because yeah, while working and while doing a bunch of things, like we basically change as humans, as entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so our values change with us, yeah, with time as well. So it's important to constantly be asking this ourselves.
Cool. Well, those are really great questions, Alan. I appreciate your time, man. So cool. We didn't even get to talk about 80s movies and yeah. good punk rock bands. Maybe next time.
We can get that another time. Yeah.
Thanks again. Stay safe and we'll be in touch.
Thanks a lot, Jari. It's been great to be here and yeah, keep in touch.
Thanks, Alan, for the awesome interview and being on the show. As promised, here are some actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Alan. Picture yourself where you want to be in a few years and ask why. Getting in tune with your why will help you stay the course. And we talk about this all the time. The why is the internal thing, the internal need that you're doing the company for. It's always good to have a very solid why so that when the zigs and zags happen, you can deal with it. What are you good at? What are your strengths and weaknesses, and how are they serving you? So you can have a passion for something but not be good at it, and that's probably not what you want to do for a company. But, you know, ask these questions. It's very important to kind of know thyself before you can actually go off and do other things. What are your values? When making decisions about what projects to pursue, Alan assigns a score according to his values to make sure he's doing what he most wants to do and will most help him get to where he wants to go. And then sometimes our values change over time, so it's good to question this periodically and check in. So, of course, your core values of what you really believe in may or may not change, but you may value certain things at certain times. I mean, when you're younger, you may value just learning, but when you get a little older, you may value your free time. So make sure you always check in with yourself. So there you have it, some of the actionable insights and questions that I learned from my interview with Alan. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at The Daily MBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.